The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, someone in Illinois hit the Mega Millions jackpot, and it wasn't me. The winning ticket was sold at this speedway in Des Plaines, Illinois, a Chicago suburb. The jackpot ballooned to more than $1.3 billion after no one matched all six numbers since mid-April. But don't toss your ticket just yet. 26 were sold matching enough numbers to win $1 million.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I'd be happy with that, wouldn't you? One day wake up, you got an extra mill. You could take care of a few bills, maybe help a few people, right? Good afternoon. It's good to be with you. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for hanging out with me. We got a lot in store today. Kind of a mixed bag coming up a little later. Hope you can hang out for the next 3 hours. We will pray the chaplet 1 hour from now. So if you really have a special need or want or desire, or you just say, Drew, I need some prayer. I'm in a mess. We're here for you. And I'd ask you to tell one other person about the chaplet. Have them join us in this hour. Maybe it's your son or daughter. Maybe it's that failing business. Maybe it's that person in, you know, facing a legal crisis right now. Maybe it's somebody waiting test results. Have them join us for this prayer. It's a powerful time when so many people get together, you know, so we'll pray. And I feel like I hit the jackpot every day. I open the mic and I get to hang out with you. And I mean that sincerely. I was thinking about this lottery. $1.34 billion to be exact, not just $1.34 billion. You know the amount of interest you would earn on that per year? I mean, you're making millions a year. You probably never have to work again. They say that after taxes and depending on whether or not you took the lump sum or a payout over 30 years, whoever won the jackpot will have somewhere around $750 million. that's a lot of money. I just hope whoever won it gets good advice. Way too many people have won these jackpots, and then they have blown it very quickly. I had saw a stat somewhere. I forget where it was. I think it was something like 75% of people who won, you know, lotteries end up bankrupt, or it was something in that range. Like 3 out of 4 people. It was super high. And when I think about, you know, Oprah did a piece years ago called "The Curse of the Lottery," and I think about the lottery because who doesn't dream about having that winning ticket, right? I think it would be fantastic. It really would be. But I don't know if I want to win it, you know? I mean, I do. Let me be honest with you. I do want to win it. I'd love to win it. But I don't know if God wants me to win it. And that's kind of the deal. Because, you know, I say intellectually, oh, my gosh, it would be so great. I'd do such good. I'd help so many people. You know, I'd bless Relevant. I'd bless this person. I'd bless that ministry. Oh, my gosh, I don't care about money. You know, I'd like to have just enough to make sure I'm okay. But I'm going to make sure that I share it, right? But then I think about how human I am, and I think if I won and I cleared after taxes and everything else, $750 million, it's so easy to say, well, you know what? I don't really feel like working this Friday, you know, let's call the guest host up, right? Or, you know, oh, maybe I'll cut back my hours, you know, because I've always said, even if I won, I'm going to continue to do what I do because I love it so much. And I feel that life on earth is not about how many zeros in your bank account at the end of the day, right? It really is. It's about introducing Christ to others. It's about drawing souls into a closer relationship with Him. It's about growing in holiness, right? It's about being a witness to others. We are evaluated and judged not on how much money we have in our account, not on how many letters follow our name, how many degrees we have, how many toys we have, how many houses we have. None of that matters. It's fleeting. You know, we don't take it with us. It's dust, right? What matters is what we do with this very short time called life. So I think about it. I dream about it. Yeah, it'd be great. When I bought my lottery ticket, I thought of how I've already spent half of it. You know, I mean, it's just, it's great, right? But I know my human nature, and I just don't think it's for me to win. Now, if somebody wants to, you know, leave me in their inheritance and I get a surprise, that'd be great. Wouldn't it be nice to one day find out of the blue that, hey, you know, suddenly, you know, you've come into some money. That's fantastic. But, you know, I think $750 million, you need to really set it up properly and make sure that that instrument, that blessing from God is an instrument of blessing for others. Maggie, I don't know, did you buy a ticket or not? My old producer, Jake, I know you knew him well as well. You know, he never in his life ever bought a lottery ticket.
What?
He He said, I have never bought one. And, you know, statistically, you know, the odds of winning it are ridiculous. You get struck by lightning,
sure,
you know, six times before you'd ever have a chance of winning the lottery, you know, and how many people ever get struck by lightning? So,
well, I don't know. I mean, I was always someone that said the same thing. But then once upon a time, I won a brand new car out of a raffle drawing exactly when I needed one. So stranger things have happened.
I didn't hear that story. I would love to hear that story one day. I think that is super cool. And, you know, God does surprise. I know people have had unbelievable blessings that way, where cars mm-hmm. have come in when they needed a car. Or, as I shared before, I knew a person who actually was given a house. Mm-hmm. They were in a big prayer. They were doing the St. Andrew Novena, and somebody, you know, without them knowing, it came up and said, I want to buy a house. So, I mean, God can bless in big, big time ways. So, I don't know. It's something I think about, but, you know, there's this curse of the lottery I was mentioning that Oprah did. And there are a lot of people who won the lottery and they've either died broke or their life has ended in a really dismal way. I knew a woman in Chicago who knew a guy who won the Powerball lottery. He won like, I don't know how many, tens of millions of dollars. And, it ruined his life. You know, the way the story goes, and I hope I recount it correctly, he was working, I think, in a factory somewhere, and he won the Powerball ticket. He realized that he had won the lottery. And he said to his buddy who worked with him there in that factory, I just won the Powerball lottery. I don't know what I should do. There's something kind of nagging at me saying I shouldn't cash this in. And the guy said to him, he says, throw it away. Tear it up. It will ruin your life.
Wow.
But of course, how many of us would ever tear up a multi-million-dollar lottery ticket? No. But, you know, you sometimes have that breath of the Holy Spirit, that inspiration that tells you to do that. And he went and he cashed a lottery ticket, you know, and he spread it out over 20 years. His wife started taking tennis lessons. His son, you know, had the new car. Well, before you know it, the wife is leaving him with the tennis pro. Mm. The son becomes a heroin addict. And this guy tried to kill himself, I think, on two different occasions. He drove into a cornfield one night and tried to, you know, cut his wrists. Those are dismal cases. I don't want to bring everybody down. But I think about those cases. I think about what happens in situations like that. And I could share story after story of cases like that. So, you know, look, all the glitters is in gold. We don't take with us what we have. You know, where you can store your treasure, you know, where rust and moth can devour it, but we need to store our treasure in heaven, you know, and that's what this is all about. I was looking at believe it or not, a Joe Rogan video. My son was over the other night, and, hey, Dad, you got to check out the CIA director that he was talking to. It was about national security and our power grid and all the rest of this stuff. And I thought, you know, how fleeting life can be with nuclear weapons, with down power grids, with things along those lines. And then he showed me a video afterwards with a former, I guess he was a Russian spy who defected to the States. And this video is old. It was like from the 70s. This wasn't Rogan. This was somebody else. It was like an hour presentation to journalists. And this guy showed you the breakdown, how communist and Marxist governments, they want to get rid of religion first. And then what happens afterwards? How certain ideologies are introduced, how equality, everybody's got to be equal. We have all these things. You know, we see everything that's happening in the culture today. And he broke this down in 1970-something, right, is unfolding today. But what struck me was the mission of Relevant Radio. I mean, we're such a light. God, by the end of his talk, he says the only way to – he says 2 times 2 is 4. Right? That's a truth. But you don't see people lining up to die or be flogged or murdered for that truth. But people are willing to die for God. They're willing to die for Jesus Christ, for the belief in their faith. And that's what these communist, Marxist, atheistic type of ideologies want to eradicate. But it's also the solution, he says. It is what keeps a nation free. It's what keeps a nation prosperous. And it's what keeps, a nation from collapse. And I just thought, you know, Relevant Radio is such a blessing. Such a gift to us, isn't it? Such a gift to be able to have this platform. And I said to myself, I'm so grateful to have this platform to be able to bring truth to people on a daily basis, to be able to shine light on issues that unfold all around us. So, you know, and I'm thankful for your support here, too, of Relevant Radio, because without you, we would not be here. So I'm grateful. I'll leave it at that. I didn't expect to talk about all this. I was just thinking about the lottery. I got a lot to get into. The president has COVID. I want to pray for one of my colleagues at Relevant. Maggie told me it was a crazy day amongst the producer pool there because One of the producers here came down with COVID. He had to run and get tested. So say a prayer for my own producer. I need Maggie this week, all right, that she'll be healthy and safe. But the president has tested positive for COVID again. You know, he took that antiviral drug, Paxlovid, and he tested negative last week. He looked pretty good until Saturday when he tested positive again. And doctors say he's experiencing no symptoms. He hasn't been put back on the drug. And the president, of course, is isolating himself just to be on the safe side. So he has what they call a rebound case after taking Paxlovid. And it's possible, but there was a Mayo Clinic study said that these cases are very rare. Now, he's up in age, so I would say pray for him. So here's a little bit from Dr. Kevin O'Connor. Listen.
President Biden has again tested positive for COVID-19 and is back in isolation. Just last week, the president tested positive for the virus. He experienced mild symptoms and was treated with Paxlovid. He then had 4 negative tests beginning on Tuesday night. After a second test on Wednesday, he came out of isolation and credited his speedy recovery with advancements made in fighting the pandemic. The White House says the president continued to test negative until this morning. Doctors say the president has a rebound case, something a small number of those treated with Paxlovid experience. The White House says Mr. Biden has not had any symptoms reemerge.
So I'll say it again. Let's pray for him. Let's pray for his health. And, of course, the second in command, Kamala Harris. We got a lot going on in the country with Taiwan. In fact, we'll talk about that coming up in just a minute or two here. And inflation, recession, so much more. In fact, speaking of recession, the president is facing not just COVID, but he's got recession there, inflation, which everybody was saying, the Biden administration was saying was temporary, and then it turned into transitory. These are the words we're using. It's just temporary. We're coming out of a pandemic. Okay. We'll give him a little bit of rope on that one. And then, it's transitory. It's transitory. We're in a transition. Now we know it's rather permanent, right? It's turned into a recession, and yet the administration doesn't want to acknowledge this. They're trying to change the definition of the word recession so they can avoid blame for it. And here's my frustration again, right? I talk about the power of words. I talk about the power of words, and they love to co-opt words, don't they? They love to take words like abortion and turn it into something like pro-choice or reproductive justice. They like to take a term that has been defined for decades. The word recession is 2 consecutive quarters of negative growth, and change it. But here's the scary part of this, okay? It's not just they're trying to do it for political means. I almost could understand that. But when you have Wikipedia, people reference this all the time. I'm always very cautious of Wikipedia, but if you go online, Wikipedia got into the battle. They changed its definition to go along with the Biden administration is saying. And again, this is all part of big tech going along with the lie. Here's a little from The Hill in their breakdown of this. Well, Wikipedia lockout, you can't change it. Listen.
So propaganda and media have obviously, this is not new, the confluence of government propaganda attempts and media kind of running with them when it serves their purpose and their ideology and their business, whatever it happens to be at that particular moment. But I feel like we're kind of in Orwell's world that he wrote about in Politics in the English Language, where we've gotten to a point where it's just like we don't agree on anything, and the only people that benefits are the people in power. And it's much different than the war propaganda, bad as it has been for decades. It seems to be creeping into absolutely every single aspect of our politics and our lives.
Yeah, and I think words that we even used to all commonly agree on the definition of are kind of losing their meanings as people contest them, from the right and the left for their own advantage.
Like how the internet is supposed to work, that it's this kind of collaborative place where instead of having the government decide what the definition of a recession is, we can sort of hash it out. But then Wikipedia came in and locked it and said the previous iterations of the article were false, which is, again, that's another decision. That is a more centralized decision. It's not organic. But to your point, what you're saying is that the definition of a recession actually does matter, because it matters in terms of how the Fed approaches its various mechanisms, which is, I think, really frustrating from the perspective of regular people in the country.
Yeah, look, bottom line is this. No matter how you refine it or redefine it, I should say, our country's in a recession. You know it, right? Inflation is hurting people's pocketbooks. I don't like to dwell on it, but take a look at how much it costs you to drive your car today. Take a look at shrinkflation, how packages are getting smaller and you're getting less product for what you're paying for. Take a look at the cost of meat or all the other things you may have bought in the past, how high it's going up. According to AAA, the reason why gas prices are going down right now, do you know why? It's because of a sudden decrease in demand, supply and demand, right? People just can't afford to put $100 in their gas can, right, into their gas tank. So they're driving less. Demand is down. Therefore, the costs come down. Finally, one last story. The Jerusalem Post, they're reporting that Iran's Revolutionary Guard has said that they can use the country's peaceful nuclear energy program and they can turn it into a nuclear warhead immediately. And there was a video I saw basically said that the guard declared that that Iran's regime will develop nuclear weapons in a rapid-fire period of time if the U.S. or the Zionist regime makes any stupid mistakes. So per, you know, Iran International, the video states that Iran's ballistic missiles have the capability, if you're listening to me in New York, you might want to turn up the radio. Maybe they have the capability of turning the Big Apple, turning New York into what they say, quote, is hellish ruins. And that's in an, you know, ostensible reference to Iran's space program. So, like, I hope the Biden administration takes note of that. They discontinue discussions with this terroristic state. I don't think more nuclear weapons makes the country safer. In fact, we're having issues on the international scene right now. House Speaker Pelosi, the third most powerful person in the government, is on tour of Southeast Asia right now. And normally that wouldn't be a big deal, except for the fact that the original plans had called for her to go to Taiwan. But then China got wind of that itinerary, although they knew about this. You know, this was on the docket for a long time. But they're acting like they just got wind of this. And now they're blustering about it. They made this threat. And this is, can you imagine any nation saying this? They made a threat they could shoot her plane out of the sky. CNN checked the number of sources that are reporting it, and they're saying she's definitely going to go to Taipei. Well, you have to. Of course, if it doesn't happen, China's response, if she does go, I should say, you know, who knows what could happen with China. I don't know what they're going to do. I couldn't imagine them taking action. I think it's a lot of saber rattling, but they've been playing war games over the last year or so with mock attacks on the island, the island nation there, Taiwan. And right now, the U.S. really isn't in any position to help Taiwan for lots of reasons. So a visit at this moment, nice gesture to our ally. Is it a good decision? Can we not go? Can we afford not to go? Or do we absolutely have to go? Dr. Jeffrey Shull joins me today, president of the Alexandrian Defense Group, an expert in counterinsurgency warfare. Doctor, good to have you back. What do you make of these threats, and what do you make of our position? Should the U.S. absolutely go, or do you think we should just say, okay, we're gonna avoid this time?
Hi, Drew. Hi. I would sum it all up with one word: midterms. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's two words. Look, the longstanding U.S. policy has been the one China policy, acknowledging that Taiwan essentially belongs to China, and that it, through peaceful means, eventually it'll be absorbed into China. All right. Things are not going stellarly, if there is such a word, in Ukraine. Things are looking horrible for the midterms for the Democrats. I mean, just downright looks like a wipeout. And I think there's at very least a distraction is needed, or possibly a foreign policy coup of some sort that says, yeah, we're doing okay. I would say it's a pretty serious roll of the dice. If in the discerning Chinese rhetoric and bluster, they said some fairly powerful stuff. One of the things they said that in Chinese rhetoric means we've got no room left is if we, how did the phrase go? If we accept this, what won't we accept? Right. Something to that effect. I might be misinterpreting there, but
I get it.
So it's that's pretty serious for them. And what more importantly, they see this as a disruption of a longstanding U.S. policy in agreement with China. So to them, it's a serious breach because now the argument was this. Well, she's not the president. She doesn't represent U.S. policy. But, you know, what that even goes against what most Americans recognize, that, you know, the Speaker of the House is third in line. If the president dies and the vice president is incapable, guess who's president?
That's right.
Nancy Pelosi. Now, the real cynical mind might say, you know, if the Chinese shot down her airplane, it might be doing America a favor. But
oh, boy. That is funny. Let me ask you about our position right now, though.
Sure.
I mean, we left Afghanistan with our tail between our legs. It was a humiliation for the U.S. Russia, I think, was emboldened by that. They've rolled into Ukraine. We've seen what's happening there. Now we're spending billions to support that Ukrainian effort. Is this perhaps a good moment, an opportune time for China to say, you know what, we want Taiwan, we're going to take it back, and you know, the U.S. is compromised with leadership and with the position they're in, or is this all part of the jostling and saber rattling that often takes place?
Well, first, I do just a slight attenuation on that tail between the legs. I don't think America left with its tail between its legs. Its leaving was a disaster in terms of it was so poorly planned. I mean, it had to leave. There was no point. And yes, Biden got, he actually was encouraging the Afghan president to lie to the people, saying, mm-hmm. everything's okay. Well,
right.
So, yeah, that was all disgusting politics. But
Americans behind, too, Doctor.
Yes,
you know, we
left
people who
hated
us. I mean, we could have done that. We could have, you know, got our people and those other people out in a much more organized way.
No, that's true. People were let down.
Our pants were on fire. You know, it's just, and I agree. I wanted out. I wanted out of Afghanistan for sure.
Yeah. It was a very badly planned way. Let's put it that way. And it looked bad. But anyways, basically we agree on that, Drew. Now, is this the place to do a reset after? Well, the Ukraine policy, of course, has been in place a long time. That was a planned policy to get that going and weaken Russia. So, the Pope himself said that. He said, to his mind, it looked like NATO provoked that war. Well, of course it did. It's been provoking it for a long time. So, okay, that's totally backfired, that one. The Russian economy is stronger than it's ever been, which was one of the goals. So that goal, the NATO goal to...
Let me ask you about
Russia.
That, too, Doctor.
Sure.
We only have a few minutes. I do want to get back to China, but Russia's ruble, sure. I understand. I mean, these sanctions don't seem really to be having an impact on Russia right now. What's going on
they've done
that?
The opposite. The ruble has never been stronger.
I know, it's crazy.
And they're awash in cash because I think I heard you talking a few minutes earlier about, in other areas of the world, the demand for oil went up. So, like China and India can't get enough of it. And India, ever the crafty outfit that they are, they're turning around and they're getting the Russian oil at 30% discount, turning around and flogging it to others at full price. But anyways, that's them. Back to China. I think there is some of what you're saying. I think there's a need for a foreign policy win. But I don't see that that's the best place to get the foreign policy win. It especially right now, America's got big issues at home. It could again, the cynical mind say, well, we need a distraction. Midterms are coming up. And we need some, I don't think it's well advised, but I don't think that anything coming out of that State Department has been well advised in many years since the Clintons stuffed it full of their acolytes.
So, Doctor, I have a couple minutes left here, and I want to bring some clarity.
Sure.
Somebody called in and thought we're suggesting that the Chinese should shoot down Nancy Pelosi's airplane. Well, nobody has said that, and certainly we would never want that. So just bring clarity to any people tend to hear some things incorrectly.
Yeah, no.
I understand you're saying that in jest. Chinese, is this an opportune time for them to go in, and how do you see this playing out for this administration, because, you know, the Chinese are performing all those exercises, the flyovers, all that type of thing. How do you, where are we with them right now?
Well, it is a danger. We're in a danger spot because, first of all, you know, sailing the fleet up there, a carrier fleet, is good if you're up against a country that doesn't have working hypersonic missiles. But essentially, they do, and the hypersonic missile renders surface fleets pretty well obsolete in terms. Absolutely. I mean, they just come in so fast and from angles you just cannot defend against them. So there's a lot of bluff and bluster going on both sides, and it's really, I mean, this could go sideways. Don't mistake me on that. This could go sideways very fast. And I know they said they haven't published her, that they took Taiwan or Taipei off the timetable. At the same time, sources in Taipei say that there's a hotel booked for her and her staff, so in a major hotel. So.
I think she's going to go. Who knows? I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. Well, I'll bring it back. Yeah. We can talk much more about it. I've got to carve out a lot more time for you because I always enjoy our conversations. You're well-versed and well-informed, and I always enjoy hanging out with you. Hey, Doctor, thank you. Appreciate the insights. We'll catch you real quickly before I let you go. Best way to track you down or your book, if people want to follow you or get connected to you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, book's still there on Amazon.com and other places, but I think that's the main one. Contact me through AlexandrianDefense.org
Sounds good. Well, the book is called The Lost Mandate of Heaven, and again, check out Dr. Jeffrey Shaw, his writing, and everything else at AlexandrianDefense.org. We'll catch up again soon. Doctor, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Drew.
All right. I've got to take a short pause. When we come back, we have to change gears. The Holy Father, I want to talk about what he had to say. Pope Francis says the door is open to eventual retirement as he slows his pace. Now, before I pause here to take this break, think about that. What would that mean? Two Pope Emeritus's? Would we have three popes in some respects? How likely is that? Has it ever been done before? We'll look at that more when I return.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Pope Francis hinting at his own possible retirement this morning on the plane ride home from a 6-day trip to Canada. The Pope acknowledging to reporters that he can no longer travel like he used to due to knee problems. He said this visit was a test that showed he needs to slow down and one day possibly retire. The trip was the first where he used a wheelchair, walker, and cane to move around, which limited his ability to mingle with the crowds.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I never thought I would ever, at least in my lifetime, see another pope retire. What an anomaly it was when Benedict XVI shocked the world. And I remember the day vividly because this has never happened, you know, at least in my lifetime or for centuries, if you think about it. February 11th was the day, 2013. I remember getting a phone call early that morning. And it was one of my producers saying, did you hear what's happening? Benedict announced he was going to retire from the office of the papacy, and it was a shock. It sent shockwaves, literally, around the church and around the world because no pope had voluntarily retired since Pope Celestine V in 1294. So we are talking centuries. You know, Gregory the 12th, of course, he was forced to resign in 415 at the end of the Western Schism, but that was the last time that we had a pope leave office before he died. So if you go to the short, you know, if you look at the short stick, 600 years, a half a millennium, come on. Now you've got a pope that has people wondering. He just spent last week in Canada, right? He looked really frail. He was in his wheelchair. And this man, I think in some respects he's a victim soul. I mean, I really do think he suffers, and I'm sure he's offering it for the church and for the world. He's got sciatica, his back, his leg give him issues. He's in a lot of pain. He can barely walk. Remember when he did the consecration of Russia and Ukraine and the world to the Immaculate Heart? I mean, you saw him hobbling around. He sat for a lot of that. He had the surgery on his digestive system, I think it was last year, from the public media reports, he's still holding up after that. But he has had to, if you looked at his schedule, he had to cancel a lot of appearances and audiences because of ill health over the last few months. And, of course, that keeps the question about him retiring coming up. John Paul II, the Pope of my lifetime, your lifetime, he died slowly. He had Parkinson's. We saw what happened. Very holy death. And what a man he was. What a victim soul he was. Will Francis retire? We're getting different answers from him. Sometimes he said no. There's no question about retirement. Other times, last week, he says, yeah, sure, popes can retire. And, of course, if he does retire, that's going to be the first in the history of the church. We have never had two retired popes at the same time. In fact, Celestine didn't even remain very long in retirement because I think he died about 5 months after he left office. Benedict XVI, a lot of people were saying, he's really up there in age. He's probably not going to live that much longer. He's probably going to die shortly after he left office. But he's still with us. Thank God, right? 9 years later, still living at the Vatican. I mean, his brother had passed away. And another retired pope, to that and an active pope on the throne, I think could make for some maybe interesting ecclesiastical politics. I don't know. Let's talk about it. Let's look at it. This has never happened. It may not happen. Let me just throw that out there, too. But the specter has been raised, and I think it's well worth exploring. I'm joined today by Carl Olson. Carl is the editor of Catholic World Report, and he authored a book called Called to Be the Children of God, the Catholic Theology of Human Deification, amongst a number of other books. And that's an interesting conversation itself. We should really get him back to talk about that. But you can check him out. Here's a good resource for you if you're not familiar with it. It's called CatholicWorldReport.com. Hey, Carl, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Always good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, what do you make of this news? I mean, Pope takes these plane flights, and so often, there's stuff about contraception, retirement. There's all this different stuff that seems to come out of it. There is a consistory plan for the end of the month to create new cardinals, and then right. Pope Francis was going to make a side trip to a small town in Italy. With so much to talk about here. Let's talk about his retirement. Let's talk about why that might be significant and so much more.
Well, there's been a number of rumors. I think the rumors actually go back a few years ago because Francis has had a number of health problems. And with Benedict retiring, that door is open, even in this recent interview 2 days ago, when he's coming back from his trip to Canada, Pope Francis referred to the possibility of retiring as normal. He used the word normal. I don't think it's normal. We don't look at the retirement of Pope Benedict, the first one in at least 600 years, as being normal. And as you say, having two retired popes would be very, very unusual. On the other hand, I don't think that it would actually, canonically, theologically, doctrinally, I don't think it would cause problems. I do think, however, it would cause a lot of confusion. I think that it would be sensationalized. It's interesting in this interview, the press conference in flight, he was asked twice about the possibility of retiring. So it's something that the media focuses on. It's something to chat about. Obviously, something we want to pay attention to. But the one remark I would quickly say, Drew, is interesting that the way that you had that clip at the beginning, and I've been reading some stories about this, and it's presented almost like, well, if a pope can't travel, then can he really be a pope, And I'm thinking, well, prior to the modern era, popes didn't really travel, of course. So I think there's some confusion about the nature of the papacy, and I think that there's some confusion about what this would cause or what would come about if, say, Pope Francis were to retire tomorrow. I think there would be a lot of confusion. I think it would cause sensation. I don't think it would actually change anything, except there would be, I think, such a furor that, you would hope that calm and reasonable minds would kind of take the day. But I just think that we live in an era now where we know, if the Pope turns left instead of right to go down the hallway, it's news, right? So a big deal is made out of it. But I think, his comments about resignation, finally, to sum up here, were made because he was asked about it like three times, so he has to say something. And what's interesting to me is he said he doesn't think about it. And he also said that that's up to God. If God prompts him, you know, every day he discerns, Pope Francis said, he discerns what the Lord wants from him. He talked about how as a Jesuit, he follows a certain means of spiritual discernment, following the Ignatian way of discernment. And, you know, he referred to that. So I think it's a little bit of a, on one hand, kind of a tempest in a teapot. On the other hand, we do know that this papacy, like all papacies, will conclude. Certainly if it does conclude with a resignation, and we do have two popes, two retired popes, excuse me, be very clear about that, you know, it will make for a lot of sensational news, but it won't change anything theologically, doctrinally, et cetera, when it comes to the nature of the church and the papacy.
You know, we're talking about 2,000 plus years, right? I mean, why haven't we seen this in the past? I mean, people age, people get sick. Why now? And is there a value in not retiring and allowing your sickness to, I don't know, be a witness to the church at large?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons, Drew. One is we live in an age, as you know, the information age. We now know everything that the Pope says, does, all the time. You know, you go back not too many decades, really, and you go back to even the first half of the 20th century or even the middle of the 20th century. It's not like people really knew what the Pope was doing a lot of the time. I mean, obviously, since the time of, I would say, you know, Leo XIII in the late 1800s, we've had many more papal documents that have kind of come out, and we've had kind of a plethora of those over the last, say, 130 years or so. And I think part of that is because of the nature of the information age and the fact that this can get around very quickly. But now with the advent, of course, internet now for many decades, et cetera, it's just constantly in line. So there's such a focus. And that isn't, you know, historically, for the vast majority of the history of the church, that really wasn't the case. Yes, the Pope was obviously important. It was, you know, a belief of Catholics that the papacy holds a special place in authority, et cetera. But there wasn't this fixation that we now have on the papacy, which I think in part is due to the technology. I think it's due in part to the fact that John Paul II had such a long papacy and he traveled so much. He traveled more than any other pope. He wrote so much. And I think that kind of set a certain standard, if you will. But also people are living longer, right? So John Paul II died at a very, he was very old. I forget the exact age, actually, off the top of my head. You know, Benedict was mid-80s, what, 85, 86 when he retired? He's now 95. Francis is 85. So you're seeing that component as well, whereas, of course, for many centuries, popes would die in their much, much earlier. I mean, you know, it was not unusual for popes to die in their 50s or 60s or whatever. So I think those are two factors that have played a role in where we're at now.
If he does retire, what's the next conclave look like? I've heard one cardinal say that because, you know, Francis didn't follow the practice of John Paul II and Benedict XVI to have this extended time for the cardinals to meet before and after consistories. Nobody really knows each other. How do you see that playing out?
Well, you know, it's a million dollar question, Drew, and I think there's a lot of speculation. It's really fascinating because on one hand, here we are, we live in this age of instant communication, and yet it's true that most of the cardinals don't really know each other. And a lot of that makes sense. I mean, these are men who are very busy. They live all over the world. I mean, it's not like a cardinal saying India is going to be spending time chatting with a cardinal in New York City or, you know, Argentina or something like that.
Right.
So there's those difficulties, the language barriers, the cultural barriers. So it's still, in many ways, very much like when the cardinals would get together for conclave, say 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Right.
But there is more information now still without all that said. So I just think that the next conclave, regardless of how it comes about, I think because of the fact that we want to know everything and we have access to so much, I think it's going to be crazy. I think it's going to be nuts.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be just constant speculation. I think it's going to make the 2013 conclave almost look like, you know, a stroll in the park. I really do think it's going to be really nuts. So I think it's just a matter of again, being calm and reasonable about things, having a clear idea of what the papacy is, what the conclave is for, the nature of how this goes about, and not fall into so many of the there's so many conspiracy theories now, as you know, regarding Benedict's resignation and whether Pope or Francis is really the Pope, et cetera. And I think it really has done great harm to the church and to the faith of many people, having all that stuff flying around.
That's for, let me ask you just something that I don't know the answer to. And you know, thinking about the conclave and how crazy it is, let's say Francis says, okay, I want to retire. Can a Pope's retirement be prevented, say, by the Cardinal, the College of Cardinals, saying, not now? Mm-mm. I mean, how does that work?
Well, off the top of my head, like from a canonical standpoint, I don't have a good answer for that. I would say that because the Pope does have in many ways, a unique authority, that if he does say, I'm going to retire, that's kind of that, right? But I do think it wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah. And I think this is the case maybe with Benedict as well, where people would come to him and talk to him and say, well, hey, you know, are you sure this is what you want to do, et cetera? I just do hope that if Francis retires, I hope that he'll make it very clear. I mean, that it'll be as clear as possible, you know, why, how that's going to take place. That there'll be a clear explanation of the process. Unfortunately, the nature of the media and the nature of the internet, it's going to be a lot of confusion, a lot of misinformation. I think that's unavoidable. So it behooves us as Catholics to really know as much as we can about the possibility of how these things would work.
And pray for the Holy Father and for his health and for the great task and mission God has set before him. Final thought here, because I have a minute left. There are people who argue that a pope is a pope for life, and any of these abdications, it's kind of a disruption to this apostolic succession from Peter. Is there any support for that in the tradition? I mean, how do you see that?
My immediate response is that the papacy, the Petrine office, is exactly that, an office. And I think Francis actually made a really good comment about this in his press conference, where he notes that he actually referred to it as a job, which I think, you know, some people are like, oh, how could he view it that way? But he talks about it as a vocation, as something you're called to. But I think he's right in saying that, hey, it's an office, and you are in that office. And then if the Lord wants you to be removed, either death, which has usually been the case, or by resignation, which is obviously much more rare, then that's the case. And then, you know, Benedict is no longer in the office of the papacy. He is not the pope. I think the term, you know, the one thing I will say, I think the term Pope Emeritus, I think it has caused some confusion. You know, I think there's that, but I think it's an office, you know, and I think that's key to, he remains a priest forever. Priesthood, yes. Pope, no.
All right. Well, hey, Carl, thank you. Let's get you back to talk about the Catholic theology of human deification, you know, called to be the children of God. I know we talked about that in the past, but I'd love that. That's such a great, it's something I don't think a lot of people think about. But Carl Olson, he's the editor of Catholic World Report. Carl, thank you. I appreciate you being
here. Thank you, Drew.
You can follow his writing at CatholicWorldReport.com. Stay with me. Short break. I'll be back on the other side. The Chapel of Divine Mercy is about 12 minutes away.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's so good to be there with you. We're going to pray the Chaplet coming up in just a couple minutes. Feel free to get in at 888-914-9149. Maggie and I were just talking a minute ago about, you know, Solanus Casey, grandparents during that last break. Maggie, open your mic quickly, if you could. There was a really powerful call, I think, when I was away with John Harper. Why don't you share with everyone what that was all about? I think we should share it. I think it's inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely. It was. He was on the day that it was the feast of Saint Anne and Saint. Is it Joachim?
Yep.
And he opened up the phones and he just said, you know, how have your grandparents influenced your faith life? And we actually talked about it during a couple of different segments during the show. And there was this gentleman who waited on on deck for almost an hour to share this story. And so finally, we were able to get him on air, and he just relayed the most powerful story about his grandparents having an encounter with Solanus Casey. And I don't know if anyone was listening. Even if you did listen that day, it's totally worth resharing. Wow. So I have it clipped here if you want to take a listen.
I would love it. Let's run it.
Okay.
Jerry's in Jacksonville, Florida here, 888-914-9149 on this feast day of Saints Joachim and Anne, the maternal grandparents of Jesus, as we talk about the influence of your grandparents and making you the Catholic you are today. Jerry, are we talking about your grandmother or your grandfather? Tell us your story.
Actually, my grandmother, Amelia, who I never knew, my mother was born, and then when she was a young girl, she was hit by a snowplow in Michigan, and she was crippled.
Wow.
And they were told her that she would never be able to really walk well, turn her neck, and probably never have children. And my grandmother, Amelia, heard about, they were all Lutheran, and they heard about this priest in a monastery in Detroit. And my grandfather took my mom to see this priest. His name is Father Solanus Casey.
Wow.
And Father Solanus talked with them, and very briefly, and he just told my grandfather, go ahead and take her home. Thank God in advance, she's going to be fine. And so they started back to Ypsilanti, where they lived, and my mom saw a horse go by, and she turned her neck, which she couldn't turn before, and said, oh, Daddy, look at the horsey.
Wow.
And so she was cured before they ever got home to Ypsilanti. Unfortunately, my grandmother Amelia passed away, but on her deathbed, and this was shortly after my mom was cured, on her deathbed, she made my grandfather promise to have all the kids, all of their kids, baptized Catholic. So my grandfather, who was a Lutheran, converted, and he had the whole family, which was 13 children back then, all baptized Catholic. And so that legacy of the Catholic faith was passed on to me from my grandmother. And actually, I'm grateful to Father Solanus Casey for his working that miracle in their lives.
That is one of the most incredible stories I think we've ever heard. Wow.
And mom had seven children afterwards, obviously. I'm the oldest.
That is incredible. Have you been to the Solanus Casey Center in Detroit? Because I know we've profiled it a few times here on Relevant Radio.
Yes, I have. I've been there several times.
What's that like for you? Yeah, what's that like for you, Jerry, because of this intimate relationship that the family has with Solanus Casey?
It is very moving, and especially to see what's happened, because I've been there since I was a kid. And back then, he had a little crypt, and it was just a very small chapel. And now it's just a beautiful reception center and so forth. But he was such an amazing man, very humble. He was what they call a priest simplex, and
yes,
they made him the porter of the monastery.
He would answer the door.
People started coming to him. He
yep.
would answer the door, and word got out that he was able to, and he never accepted the praise for it. He would all say, give the glory to God. It's not him, it's God. But through his intercession, I can't tell you how many different people have been cured of their diseases and also converted because of him.
And it's amazing to see that St. Bonaventure Chapel today. And
it is.
It is incredible. If you've not been to the Solanus Casey Center, if you're really any place in the country, or especially in the Midwest, take a drive to Detroit, Michigan, plan a visit. There are so many ways that you can honor this amazing saint and learn about Blessed Solanus Casey. They have masses every day. It's incredible. Jerry, that's one of the best stories I think we've ever heard here on Relevant Radio. That is incredible. And thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you. And I really support Relevant Radio every way I can with prayers and with monthly donations, because you do wonderful work, and I've seen miracles happen in other people's lives because of you all.
Jerry, thank you so much for that witness. We do appreciate it.
Right.
Take care. God bless you.
And my thanks again to John Harper, who sat in for me last week. But Maggie, that's a fantastic story.
Isn't that beautiful?
I love it. It made me think of my own grandmother when I was a little boy. Oh, I don't know, 5-6 years of age. I remember her taking me to the parish down the street, and we'd get there and sit in the pew. She'd pray a rosary. We'd kneel before the Blessed Mother after Mass and say a prayer. And, you know, grandparents, as well as parents, I mean, have such a profound impact on the formation of their children and grandchildren's spirituality. So set that example. If you as a parent are not going to church, you know, don't expect your kids to go to church. And I'm telling you what, you're shortchanging them of the grace that God wants to give to them. I loved what you talked about, the miracles that take place there too. You know, I often think about the incredible miracles that take place in the lives of these saints who are given this gift of knowledge, where they'll say, take your wife home, take your spouse home, take, you know, whoever it might be, they're going to be healed. They're going to be fine. God communicates. They are on a special plane, and God heals. I mean, you see it not only with Solanus Casey, St. Alphonse Liguori, whose feast day it is today. I was reading about him earlier. The miracles that take place around some of these men and women of God are just legion. You and I are called to be saints, and you and I can pray for one another right now. Let's implore the Heavenly Father, okay? If you have a need, if you're praying for that miracle that seems impossible, well, let's all, many hands make light work, right? Many prayers, I think, make a louder voice and get right to the throne of God. Let's pray when we come back, okay? 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. If you're new to the program, that's your direct line. Get you into the conversation as well as into this prayer. Don't forget Twitter. Maggie will be putting up and sharing your intentions on our Twitter, from our Twitter account in just a minute. So you want to quickly type one up at Drew Mariani Show. That's our Twitter handle. I'll be right back. I'll share a couple emails right after this.